Christopher Mulin, founder and chief market strategist of the Technical Traders. Welcome to the Competent Investor. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tom. Always a pleasure.
Chris, you and I always seem to speak when big moves in the markets are happening here. Does it seem to you like we could be actually approaching a FOMO phase in the markets? Is this, you know, kind of what a blow-off top can start to look like?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we saw a FOMO and a blow-off top in precious metals earlier this year. We saw, especially in silver, we saw that whole euphoric phase take place. The equities market usually doesn't have quite the same type of extreme FOMO as an individual commodity or stock. But we're definitely, I think, starting to see FOMO take place. We had a very strong earnings round. AI resurgence has come back and everybody's piling into technology. When we look at where money is going, it is chasing returns. It is not looking for safety right now. It is piling into technology, AI. It's moving into small caps and even more so into the micro caps, the penny stocks. So people are full on risk on mode. They're like, make me rich, right? They're piling into this market. So that's kind of where we're at. And usually when I see these extremes, it usually starts to make you wonder like, okay, this is starting to feel like it's kind of easy money. I mean, the market's just gone up and to the right very quickly. It is easy money. If you didn't get in, you missed out. I do think it's getting a little overdone. And when we see money like this chasing big returns and risk has been thrown out the window, it's a warning sign. And You know, people don't want the boring sectors or anything like that. They want the risk on.
Well, I mean, I guess inherent in that, does that show us, let's say, a better gauge of how to use sentiment within understanding markets that we should be being cautious of maybe getting out of and showing us the markets that we should be getting into?
Yeah, I think that's exactly how it is. I think when sentiment goes to an extreme, when everybody's bullish and everybody thinks things are going higher and, you know, you got to be in them, the sentiment is too strong. Usually when the herd is all running in one direction at the full speed, you got to be the one to be like, okay, I got a feeling it's a crowded play. If everybody's going the same direction, there might not be much more to go because they're already piling in. So I think the sentiment is very important. Right now, when we look at the S&P 500 equal weighted ETF like RSP, it really is just putting in like a double top. It's not breaking out. It's not like the whole broad market is running and making huge gains. It's really at a double top. If we look at SPYD, which is just the large S&P 500 dividend paying stocks, it's nowhere near the highs just because people aren't interested in big, boring, solid companies. They want to get into the small speculative stuff, right? And same with utilities. They have traded sideways for several months and they've been moving lower while the stock market's been screaming higher. And so that's a very clear sentiment shift. All the boring defensive, you know, strong companies, you know, long-term wise, aren't getting any buyers and everybody's piling into all the other stuff that has big potential, but carries a lot more risk and they're volatile, right? So the sentiment to me is a very core indicator and a very important tool that I use to know when we're in a risk on, risk off mode. Risk on means you want to own stocks. Risk off means you don't. And when we see a big trend moving up, but we see sentiment actually getting to an extreme, I consider this bearish, a contrarian indicator, then we need to understand you got to start locking in gains, trimming, locking in profits, all that stuff.
I think an important caveat to add there, though, is, you know, that doesn't mean that this market can't go higher, right? There is a possibility that we could keep extending from here just based on some of your measurements, right?
For sure. I mean, if we take a look at the stock market, we can look at the chart here of the S&P 500. You can see this huge rally that we've had. I mean, talk about, you know, easy money. Just understand when the trend changes. But, you know, where we are right here, this last phase, we're starting to chop around and stutter and it's kind of grinding and pushing higher. This phase is just like right over here. I mean, you have this initial very strong rebound, this huge, huge move, this sentiment shift, and then it goes into this grind and it always feels like the market is about to stall and top and roll over. But you'll notice it does this, it can do this for months. As you just mentioned, Tom, it's like it doesn't mean the market is going down. And this is where a lot of people fall into trouble, is they start to pick a top. They start to say, okay, I think this is going to be the end. And, you know, they'll short it. They'll start to bet on falling pricing and that it's too overextended. But this really could happen and continue on for some time. Now, depending on your strategy, it may have you in, it may have you out. We've got different strategies. Some of them are still long the markets right now. One of them, we trimmed off our QQQ position. We closed out a play. The other ones were still long the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ. It really just depends on the time frame and the style that you're trading. But there's no doubt right now, investors are moving into equities. You need to be long the equities market. And that's what we're focusing on right now. And, you know, precious metals may come back to life here soon. We're starting to see silver come to life. But as you mentioned, just because something looks maybe a little overdone, or we have this sentiment extreme where everybody's bullish, it doesn't mean it's a top. In fact, this is where bubbles happen, right? This is where things can go parabolic. It just keeps shooting higher and higher. And that's why it's very difficult to try and predict price. You're better just to follow it and let it, you know, let it tell you when the trend changes. Mm-hmm.
So exactly in that, Chris, you know, it's interesting to me looking at this chart that it's basically when the Iran war started, we had, you know, a bit of a dramatic pull down, and then yeah. It's basically been straight up from there. So what would signal to you a trend change if you are able to follow this market?
Yeah. So the way I look at the market is I use inner market analysis. I wrote about it in my book, Technical Trading Mastery. So a lot of people look at the markets from really just price. They throw a bunch of indicators on there. They follow price. And the problem with indicators is they're all pretty much based on price. So all you're doing is using the same data. You're just shaking it up differently to get a different outlook. So what I do is I look through the lens of technical analysis through price, time, and sentiment. So price action is just one sliver of it. Time is, we have time cycles. There's waves that roll through the market. We got weekly, biweekly, quarterly, semi-annual, annual waves of monies flowing into the market. Same with economic data. And then, of course, there's price, time, and then there's sentiment, is what are people thinking and feeling? And so if you look through the market through my lens, we get these two charts. This left chart here is the S&P 500. This is just the daily chart. You can see the trend will be up, but if the trend starts to go sideways long enough, if money also starts to flow out of the stock market and sentiment becomes bearish, it tells us, hey, get out of the market because it's lost its upward momentum and it's a coin toss. We don't want to hold it. And then we have the Strait of Hormuz. So the charts, this is one thing I think a lot of people also don't understand, Tom, is that price usually leads the news. The price does stuff and then the news comes out afterwards. And so we found a way to identify price and all of this stuff that it starts to tell us, hey, move out of something. And then the news usually hits. And then, of course, the market rebounded and we've seen this big rally. And so to answer your question, what is it that, you know, helps us identify it? It's those three things. And the big question is, how do you know if this is a bounce or the start of a rally? And when you put price, time, and sentiment together and they all merge in the same direction, it tells you, hey, you should be long the markets from a sentiment standpoint, a price standpoint, and a cycle. And if we look at this right-hand chart, this is our sentiment chart. This is telling us people are really, really bearish. Bars are telling us actually money is starting to flow back in. People are starting to get a little more bullish. And then suddenly we got big dark green bars. And this chart here is the sentiment chart. When it's green, people are buying. There's big money flow going in. Everything aligns, price, time, all of that. So that's how I look at it. It really is, you know, if you boil it down and try to eliminate the news and all of that stuff and just follow where the big money is going, you can identify the markets. It's you know, red or green, buy it or don't, like own it or don't own it. And, you know, the money flow is really the key here. Mm-hmm.
Well, Chris, you know, the idea of trying to trade big geopolitical events, of course, unless you have, let's say, insider tweet timing, seems to be really hazardous. Is this a great lesson on why it's so difficult to trade based on an event like that? Because one would have thought that, you know, a possible nuclear war would have been a time to become very defensive and get out of things like the equities markets.
100%. So we did a live mentoring session last week with our investors. And what's really interesting is, you know, when we had this trade trigger over here, the market had been selling off. We were in the middle of a new war starting up. And as you just mentioned, like, it could be absolutely insane. And I was, you know, telling subscribers, I said, listen, the key to long-term success is to know you have an edge based on statistic analysis and how what you do. And if you have an edge, you have to put in every single trade. You can't just say, I don't like this one, I'm not going to do it, and then get into the ones you like. The market actually, the ones you don't want to get into and that are difficult are usually the best ones. The ones that you're like, I'll get into this one, end up failing. It's just the way the market works. It gets into your head and it makes you navigate the markets completely worse timing if you use your emotions. And so when we had this trade trigger, I was telling subscribers, I'm like, listen, if you're new here, then you probably don't want to get in. We're in the middle of a war. You're wondering if this big gap up is going to be bad, if it's going to sell off and drop. And I said, the only way you can really navigate this is you still have to get involved, just put in a small position and just watch how it unfolds. If it backfires, our strategy doesn't lose a lot. It's very conservative. So you'll realize, hey, a loss doesn't kill me. And if it works out, you'll be like, wow, I really don't know what I'm doing. I am too tied to the news. And then you end up, you know, missing this. Well, everybody who got in caught this move, but we had a ton of members say they skipped the trade. And I asked why, and they're all like, because of the war, they felt like it was just a bounce. Mm-hmm. Yet our analysis was saying, you know, this is the start of a very strong trend. And this isn't a huge war. It's just another blip on the radar that's causing the markets to have a pullback at this point. And, you know, money's flowing back in. So it's very important to make sure you follow these trades, because you don't know if you're going to have like three winning trades in a row or three losing trades in a row. You know, if you flip a coin toss 1,000 times, right, the odds are it'll be pretty much even after about 1,000 tosses. But you might have these winning streaks or these losing streaks. And people, like, if you cherry pick, your odds are way off. And if you only take a couple of, say, losing trades back to back, then you lose your faith, right, and you give up. But the way I see it is, like, every time we have a losing trade, say we have two in a row, I'm like, guys, the odds of the next one winning are like really, really good. So it's like you should be excited that we have a new trade. But people's minds just go completely backwards. They chicken out. They give up. People are very, very short-sighted, unfortunately. They just can't stick to a strategy or, like, get away from the news. And the news is just constantly, it's designed to get into your head and scare you and make you second guess everything. And that's the problem with news, is it's really good at doing that.
Well, it's designed to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's interesting, Chris, the way you framed that. You know, as you're explaining it, it seems like you're telling your subscribers to use this as a learning experience rather than, you know, betting the farm on it and reinforcing the idea that this strategy works.
Yeah, well, it's just like any sport, right? It's repetition. You got to put in the reps, mm-hmm. and to build the strength, to build the mindset, to build the trust and the discipline to just follow it, just do it, right? Keep going and going. And eventually, like, we have subscribers who've been with us for many, many years. And, you know, they're in the chat telling these other people, like, just do the trade. Like, this is why you're here, right? This is, if it doesn't work out, it's not going to kill you. If it works out and you're not in it, you're going to kick yourself. And so it really just comes down to, you have to put in enough time. You got to skip enough trades or check it out. You know, it's just the way it is until eventually you hit a breaking point and find your groove and all of that. And I think that's the problem with trading. It's extremely difficult. It's probably one of the most difficult businesses to be in. And you generally have to lose a lot of your money, lose a lot of your life savings, and blow up your account and pull your hair out and have years and years of no real growth before you're like, I'm done. I need something that works. I need help, right? And unfortunately, people need to miss these trades and watch it run without them. And it actually just becomes a very good lesson. And so as much as it hurts, as long as people see it as a lesson, that's the key takeaway. Because there's mm-hmm. always going to be more trades. This is just one trade, one move, a little blip on the chart when you zoom out.
So, Chris, you know, trying to remove our emotion from the news, which of course is difficult. I understand that. You know, let's say, what signals are you looking for to confirm, or what would signal a trend change for a, you know, a real correction in the equities markets here? It doesn't seem, or let's say it seems counter to what one would think should be happening, considering there is an oil shock, energy shock, and everything downstream of that that's going to be affected. Yep. At some point that is going to be hitting all of these markets, all of the jobs, all of the savings, transports, all of this stuff. So, you know, trying to separate understanding that something like that very likely is coming and figuring out what signals are showing us that that is, you know, the trend change, what would you be looking for in that case? Because I assume that you're looking for something like that at this time because of what has happened in the Middle East.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different things at play. I mean, the thing with all these, there's some record profits going on with companies. Ever since COVID, everybody just starts jacking up their prices and gouging. And, you know, there is no real gas constraint for the first, you know, week or two in the world, or even longer than that. Yet the same day the gas prices went up like 30-40%, and then they keep creeping higher. So, you know, these events create huge profits for company because they instantly price in the higher pricing, and all the supply they have, they're getting a premium on it, right? Because it didn't cost them more for all this fuel, but now they're charging 50% more for it. So, and everybody seems to carry that forward through all their products and services. So every time there's a crisis, prices seem to jump, even though they might not have, and they might only go up a little bit, but the profits keep getting bigger for these companies because I think a lot of people are gouging and front running the potential rise of their cost down the road. So we have these events keep creating inflation. They keep creating bigger profits. But when you step back to look at the big picture, what would be the trigger for the big sell-off? I'd probably say it really still comes down to overall price action and sentiment. It's still the same. It's just we step out to a bigger chart pattern, right? We look at the weekly chart. We start to look at the monthly charts. We're like, okay, what is the 150-day or 200-day moving average doing on the daily chart? Is it actually flatlining and rolling over? What's the weekly chart pattern look like? Is it bearish? So it's always the same analysis that we use. It's just how zoomed in or zoomed out on the charts are we? And usually we'll see fundamental and economic data changing as well, but that doesn't get factored in. That's already factored into the current price. Like everything we know right now in the world is factored into the price. That's fair market value for everything right now. And so that's what I love about the stock market is it's already factoring in all of this stuff. So the news you're hearing it's old news. It's already been priced in. Like the algos and the systems already factored and thought about it. And people invested knowing what they think is coming. So it really comes down to just zooming out to the longer time frames, understanding is the longer term trend stalling out and topping, or is it still going up? Mm-hmm.
Chris, in a situation like that, what would you expect, let's say, to be able to see for a correction at this point? You know, it seems like every country, basically, obviously there are some exceptions, is in a massive amount of debt. Mm-hmm. We have seen printing over the last 5 years like never before. Is a financial reset of some sort tied to, in your mind, this period in time?
I think there will be some unwinding event, but I feel like the whole world is just a giant game of Monopoly and everybody's cheating. Everybody's just printing, making more. They're all pulling out those orange $500 bills, right? Those. So, and everybody seems kind of fine with it, to be honest. I mean, there used to be like the debt ceiling. What is that? Like, we never hear about it anymore, I don't think. So you know, everybody's kind of cheating. Everybody's printing more money. It's creating inflation. It's creating all these problems. Will it backfire and blow up someday? Most likely. And it'll be bloody ugly. Like, that's why precious metals have come to life. We've seen a huge rally. Many years of moving up for gold. Silver took off. That is, you know, what people move to. They're like, hey, it's a physical, it's a real store of value. To me, it's like a real currency. And that's a warning sign, right? With gold rocketing higher, we got wars breaking out. We've got people fighting over, you know, secretly it's all about oil probably, right? So there's all kinds of stuff going on. War and oil pricing skyrocketing and precious metals going up, that's recipe for disaster. That's just like somebody's kicked the beehive, the whole world's getting a little agitated and worried, and everybody's trying to control what the powers that they want are to protect their capital. Mm-hmm.
So what does, you know, you mentioned precious metals. Are there any other defensive sectors, let's say like utilities, for example, that do well in an environment like that?
There are. Kind of. So if the stock market sells off in a big way, everything goes down with it. Like, there really isn't a whole lot of safety. You have to short the market with an inverse ETF, which we will do, or you need to move to a different asset class. So if stocks start to fall down, but precious metals generally get sucked down with a falling market. Now they could go higher, but you really need to wait for it to prove itself. So I think, you know, we could look at the chart here and take a look at silver. Silver's showing some pretty exciting price action that's coming to life here. If we look at the silver future chart, we can see it's got a really nice pop. As you and I are talking today, it's up about 6.8%. When we zoom out on this chart, it's had a big run up. It's had this huge correction. Is this a giant bull flag before it goes up? Like, the next stop for silver, based on this current chart pattern, is $165 to $175. So if silver just hooks up here and takes off, that's the next upside target from where it is. If we zoom in on the charts a little bit more here, we actually have what's interesting here is we finally have the 50-day, which is this blue line, moving up. We have the 20-day, which is the pink line, above it. We have the 5-day above it, and price is also above the 5-day. So we're technically now in an uptrend with silver. Based on this chart, it has a series of higher lows. It has a series of higher highs. So silver's really come back to life. It's pretty exciting. It is. Silver does give more false signals than a lot of other commodities. And so I do find it much more difficult to get a true read on it. And we have been seeing precious metals move with stocks. So if stocks have a big sell-off, gold and silver would sell off. If stocks rallied, gold and silver would rally. If there's really, really, like, you know, bad news, war stuff going on, stocks would sell off, and silver and metals and gold would sell off. So they're not acting the way they normally are. So I'm still a little questioning this breakout in silver because, you know, as you and I are speaking, we got small and micro cap stocks popping and rocketing higher. And I look at silver as kind of very similar group of investors. It moves the same. Silver is very speculative. It's like the penny stock, you know, compared to gold. And so it moves faster. So if we take a look at gold, gold isn't really doing the same thing. Yes, it's got a long-term uptrend, but the 50-day moving average is sloping down. The 20 is below it. Price is below it. So it's still trying to figure itself out. And I like to look at the precious metal space through the lens of gold. And I want to know if gold is in a rising tide or falling tide environment. And right now it's neutral. The short-term trend is down. The long-term trend is up. And so we have this mixed signal, right? And so I'm waiting for gold to give me that, you know, that golden signal of the trend looks like it's legit. I don't want to get sucked into just, you know, silver popping and everybody getting excited. And that's what silver does really well. So today's up almost 7% for silver. Miners are up significantly as well. That instantly sparks anxiety. It sparks FOMO. It creates all kinds of people who are like, they have to have precious metals or they live and breathe it. It makes them feel like they're missing out. They have to get in. And silver does that really well. And that's what I feel like we could just be having, because gold isn't showing us that we have that just yet. So the precious metal space, I'm excited. I think there's some really good upside. If gold and silver do start to move higher and start to break out, gold's upside is 8,800. That's the next technical target for gold. So there's some pretty good upside potential for both of them. But I'm waiting for gold to kind of give me the all clear that, you know, I believe the safe haven play is coming back in, and we're seeing gold and silver in an uptrend, not just silver.
What, you know, let's take silver, for example. What would confirm that move to you? Obviously, you know, you mentioned the idea that we're above the 50-day, we're above, is it the 200-day, you know, price and momentum look like they're confirming that, although maybe volume isn't, right?
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of volume. People, I mean, there's a feeding frenzy for silver. Look at the volume on the futures chart here. And then suddenly we had the big drop and everybody realized, you know, how dangerous it is and how it's easy to get sucked into the hype, chewed up and spit out a day or two later, right? And now nobody wants to really touch it. So what I look for is an impulse move. And what an impulse move is for me is we need to break two previous highs. So we have this high right here, and we have another standout high over here. You could argue this could be one as well, but these are the two previous highs. And so an impulse move is a move that moves up and breaks both levels. So here we've broken one. Now we need to break the second one. And after you have an impulse move that smashes through two resistance levels, the first pause or pullback can be bought. And if it starts to break out and run, then you're going to start that new, you know, launch pad. Mm-hmm. So to me, there's still more upside to be done. We need to break a second high. Then I would ideally like to see a pause and put in a bullish pause, a bull flag pattern. And then from there, if it starts to run and break out, that's when you could potentially jump on it and ride it up to 160, 170.
Chris, obviously, you know, there's a lot of correlations that have broken, I would say, over the last 5 years. But do you look at what's happening with the dollar to, you know, add any weight of evidence to what is happening with the precious metals?
Well, the dollar, I mean, I think the equities market, I think precious metals with their huge volatility phase they've had this year, the chart pattern that we have in the dollar, like the dollar's got this huge downtrend. It's been kind of trading sideways. The big question is, I think, what does the dollar do from here? And if the dollar starts to break down and really starts to tank, we're going to see precious metals take off. We're probably going to see equities markets move higher. If the dollar strengthens and starts to break above this upper level here around the 100 mark, and if it can close and hold above there for a week or so, you know, it could be off to the races. And that means we're probably seeing precious metals move down. We're seeing equities collapse. You know, we're in a unique situation where we're at an extreme sentiment. We're at I think a long-term cycle high in terms of like a stage three where, like, 1 month, one sector is on fire. Like earlier this year, it was, you know, precious metals were at the top of our hot list. Anything related to commodities, precious metals or miners were at the top. Energy was at the bottom. Now it's completely flipped. Energy was at the top over the last month, a couple months. Now energy's back at the bottom and precious metals are starting to climb. And we've got technology pickled in there as well. So what I'm trying to get at is the dollar is in a huge pause, trying to figure out which way it's going to go. The stock market is hitting it, has sector rotation, which is usually a sign of exhaustion. So I feel like the stock market at some point is going to have a big correction. And precious metals have had big volatility. Is it a big pause or is it a big top in precious metals? And I think the big move in precious metals is going to correlate to what happens with the dollar. And so those two, I want to keep a very close eye on what they do and go from there.
As a derivative, Chris, of the, you know, the precious metals themselves, and I think we can bring sentiment into this as well, are the precious metals miners kind of showing a bearish exhaustion in that, you know, that lack of sentiment, that lack of interest over the last, you know, the last pullback that we've seen here?
Oh, well, we're definitely seeing them hold their ground. They're moving up fairly nicely. They are a little bit more like the gold miners here. It's still making a series of lower highs, but it is making a series of higher lows. So it's coiling kind of into a pennant phase here, into a pattern. And so we need to see what it's doing. You know, silver's popping and breaking out, but it's because it's a very small market. It moves very easily. It's easy to, you know, spark emotions, and a lot of people will chase it. Miners aren't quite showing that when we look at the large cap gold miners. If we take a look at the juniors, I haven't looked at those yet today. They're doing the similar price action. And if we look at the silver miners, they're still doing the same. They're getting closer to making a higher high, but they haven't been there yet. So it really is just silver popping and I think getting everybody excited. But I would say gold and mining stocks haven't actually broken out like silver have yet. And so again, that's why I'm kind of sitting on my hands. I don't mind paying higher pricing for miners or for gold. I just want to, when I get into something, I want to know it's actually in an uptrend and hopefully it's got many months to run. I don't want to just jump in blindly and pick it up because there's a, you know, one day pop or a couple days strong movement in the sector, but it could just fizzle out and sell right back off. And the way I always like to look at it, Tom, is like, if you go on holidays to a country or you don't speak the language, you can't read the signs, you get to a train station and there's an arrow each way, right? And the train's just parked there.
Yeah.
That's what gold and miners are doing right now. And same with the dollar. It's at the train station. You're like, well, I don't know which way this train is going, but I need to get on the train. And so the best thing to do is wait for the train to start moving and then run and jump on it and fall. Like once you know the direction is going, jump on. And so that's what I do. I sit on my hands a lot longer than a lot of other people and I let the train start rolling and then I get my footing, I find my signal and then I jump in. And so that's the, you know, that's a big part of, I think, being long-term successful is it's just waiting for the actual trade to unfold versus jumping in because you're excited and you think it's going to go up or down, right? And that's a big part of it, is being patient. And people aren't patient. Phones have removed our patience over the years.
I definitely agree with you on that, Chris. So maybe give us an example of something that is showing us a clear signal right now of a direction of where it's heading.
Of which, the precious metals space or just any asset class?
Any asset class. Like, you know, we're using the analogy of trying to understand where to get into, take advantage of that, let's say that big fat middle, instead of trying to pick a particular bottom or a particular top and be the first one to pick that. That's a, you know, obviously a risky point, but is there any of the markets that you're looking at that you analyze that has a clear trend to give us an example of how to understand that?
Yeah, to answer your question bluntly, no, not really. In this type of market condition, is the market through this lens of like, should we own stocks or should we not own stocks? So there may be a sector that is starting to break out and run. I have gone through many of them and a lot of them have mixed signals. Their long-term trend is down, their short-term trend is up, or vice versa. So really when we're in this market condition, I don't see anything screaming to jump in. Really all I know is I want to be long equities through either an index ETF or potentially, you know, you could get into some sectors. You know, if we look at, for example, like Microsoft, let's take a look at Microsoft. So it has a strong, this is what's going on with a lot of sectors and a lot of stocks. So the green line here is the 150-day moving average. This tells you, is it in a bull market or bear market phase, more or less? It's sloping down and prices below it. So long-term, the tide is going down. You don't want to hold it. Now, based on this price action and the type of sell-off and how it's moved, and then this impulse move that broke through one high and two highs, and now it's having its first pause and pullback, this short-term price action is actually pointing to higher pricing. In fact, we could map that out with Fibonacci extension very quickly of where Microsoft is pointing to. It's pointing to, percentage-wise, $476, about 16% upside, which would put it right back into all of this sideways trading area, which is where there's going to be a lot of shares for sale. Everybody who bought through here has just gone through a roller coaster ride. If you didn't get shaken out in panic, when you get back to break even, all those people are going to be like, just get me out at even. I'm done with Microsoft. That was a hell of a ride. So this is what's going on with most stocks and sectors is one trend is down, the other trend is up. And you're like, you know, from a daily perspective, if I was to just look at this chart and zoom in and just be kind of ignorant to other price action, forget this, you know, 150 day, I'd be like, this is a really nice looking chart pattern. It is pointing to higher pricing, but it's really just a wave within a downtrend. It could easily just fall over and roll over and sell off very, very easily. So for example, like we could just zoom back right over here. If we just look in, you know, it's hard to see because this chart is really squished down, but you get a nice rally, you get a nice controlled pullback. You're like, it's could potentially rally and break out and go to the upside, but the long-term trends are all down and eventually it just rolls over and it just sells off and it falls out of favor and it just keeps going and going. So that is the problem when the long-term trend is still down, is it could just, as good as this looks on the short-term chart, it could just be another string of selling, right? So I don't know of anything that's popping out because I'm not looking to trade individual stocks and I'm not looking to trade sectors right now. I just want to know when to be long stocks and when not to own them. That's the easy money right now. That's the most conservative, most accurate way to trade the market. It's a sector-driven market right now, so it might be a good trade. You might get a pop for a week or so, but then it could roll over and sell off a couple of days later in a big way. And that's what we've been seeing over the last couple of years. It's very sector driven, sector rotation. And if you don't lock in gains, the market usually takes it back from you a week or two later and it'll turn into a loss. And so that's why I don't have anything that's shining right now other than just own the broad market. It's a pretty basic play, but it works really, really well.
Chris, while we're looking through charts here, would you mind pulling up the oil chart and maybe we can look at copper after as well, just to kind of get a sense of how you're looking at those markets as well. You know, oil is something that has obviously been very extremely volatile over the last month and a half here. Is there any clear trend or, you know, any indication of what to expect from oil?
Well, I mean, I think we're probably going to see oil continue to trade sideways in this very big range until the Strait of Hormuz thing gets totally settled. And we've probably gone several weeks without an issue. And eventually we'll totally forget that the whole thing happened, right? It's like, so I'm expecting oil to stay elevated. It's a landmine with the social posts and what's going on. You know, one morning this is happening, the next morning it's not happening. You know, there's a ceasefire and then there's missiles shot on ships. It's just chaos, right? So usually chaos brings volatility, and then volatility naturally brings in traders. People like see these big moves and they're like, oh, I want to make money from that. That's huge. But really you're just walking through a random landmine. You're just hop, skipping and jumping your way through a field. And every morning you wake up and you just hope and pray, you know, step on something or something went off overnight, right? Mm-hmm. So I steer clear of the energy or the price of oil right now because of that. But I'm expecting oil to stay elevated, probably above that $80 range for probably a couple more months at least. And obviously if things get worse, I think oil will go even higher. But at this point, I think most people have kind of are getting numb to it, and this elevated problem is already priced into oil.
How about copper as well, Chris?
Sure. Copper's had a really nice run. It's back up bumping into kind of long-term kind of a trend channel. If we were to just kind of zoom out to a weekly chart here, I don't follow copper too closely. I don't trade it or anything like that. It's not my specialty, but you can see here, It has a series of these highs, and each time it does get slammed and sells off very, very dramatically. And so we're you know, this kind of volatility is usually not good. It's usually going to end in a really bad way. There's usually some piece of news that's driving it, sending it higher, and then it sells right back off. So to me, trading the copper space to me carries a lot more risk. Like if we look at most of these drops percentage wise, again, these are, you know, 20%+ drops over and over again. And so, I mean, when I trade my portfolio, I have a fairly large portfolio and I don't want to risk, you know, huge moves in this. I don't want to trade stuff that's really driven by news or tariffs that are going to affect things dramatically. So I steer clear of really volatile stuff where, you know, it takes 3 or 4 months to go up and then it takes 1 week to go down. That's not my style of trading. So I navigate to things that move slower, that I can put more money to work. If something moves like this, you've got to trade a lot smaller amounts of money, which then means you need to go find more trades. And if all the trades are really volatile, you can only put a small amount in each of those trades because they carry a lot of risk. So then you end up with a whole bunch of volatile stocks that you got to watch and manage. And it's a lot of work, right? So I take the path of least resistance. I don't want to be glued to the screens all day. If you trade fast moving stuff, you got to be there. I like to really just ride the tide up and watch it fall without me and then reload or benefit from falling pricing versus dancing around a chart that moves like this. But there's no doubt commodities are on the rise. We're seeing, you know, metals are moving up. Copper's got the whole data center is probably going to be fueling the copper, you know, the metal space for a while. And I think that's why we're seeing it post some really strong gains. The data centers, AI is, I mean, we're going to be some crazy in 10 years from now, the amount of power we're going to be drawing for all these AIs. And I heard a stat, I don't remember exactly what it was. My sister told me this a while ago, but just like, you know, ChatGPT making the welcome comment, like, oh, that's a great idea. Like they make you feel all good, right? They've designed it to make you feel happy and good to hear from it. Uses so much energy. If they would just cut to the chase and just give you the bloody answer, right? Then we could save so much electricity. It would be insane.
Yeah. Fair point. So Chris, how does one manage risk in this environment? Do you need to be like Berkshire Hathaway and go to, you know, $397 cash position, $1 billion cash position?
Yeah. I mean, that's what we do. We've been building and raising cash. We closed out our QQQ position for a 15% gain last week. Mm-hmm. We still own the S&P 500, but we've been moving to cash. We hold a lot of cash in just an ETF, BIL. So you just get paid daily interest, a monthly dividend payment, just sitting on the sidelines safely until there's a new opportunity. Now, if the NASDAQ, for example, pulls back and trades sideways for a week or two, we might get a new trigger. If it starts to turn up, we can reinvest fully back into the QQQ for that allocation and ride it higher. But you have to raise capital. You know, this is the one other thing that I'm seeing, Tom, is we've got a lot of investors and I know the sentiment is getting kind of euphoric because they're saying, can I go back into QQQ or can we add to our S&P 500 trade? I want more of a position. I'm like, guys, we just had like this straight up rally. Like this, whatever we get now is icing on the cake. The easy money has been made. And now you want to like leverage more money at potentially a peak when it's now going to be hard to make money. It's probably going to be a slower grind to generate returns. So when people throw risk out the window and they want to get back in because of FOMO, that's a warning sign. So that's how I see the markets.
Chris, something I've seen you've been writing about lately is, and obviously this is really important to people my age and younger, how do you build wealth and therefore time optionality in this environment as a young person?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways to do it. Unfortunately, or fortunately, time is money. So if you're younger, right, you have time. And so you can get it. I think you need to spread your money over some investments. I think some of the biggest gains are through real estate. Long-term. I still think real estate's a little kind of frothy or it's going to take some time, but I do think you need to own some of those real estates because the dollar, you know, fiat currencies are dropping every year, which is why everything else goes up in value. So you do need to like own assets. That's why the wealthy keep getting richer is they own a lot of assets and they're going up in value as the dollar, the buying power keeps falling, right? So you need to accumulate assets that go up in value. You don't go buy a new truck, right? Like that's like teenager, they come out and they want to buy a new vehicle. I'm like, that is not an asset unless it's for work. And hopefully you buy it used maybe if you want to be efficient. But you really do need to accumulate assets. I think equities and real estate are the best. You move into those. I also think another way, I mean, we're deviating away from the stock market here, but long-term, like whole life insurance is huge. It's very tough to beat. If you do it right, you can average about, you know, 12 to 15% return a year over the long run. And that means you pay up front a certain amount of money for the first 10 years, and then it funds itself and you have this huge retirement ticket when you're older. If you started at a young age, you'll be extremely wealthy, millions and millions that you can pull out tax-free, because when you die, the insurance pays it off. So I think you need to do all of these. I do all of these with my family and all of that stuff. It's very important to spread yourself through multiple different asset classes, insurance, real estate, mm-hmm. equities, commodities, you know, bonds type of thing. But people need to save, and they need to buy assets. And I tell this to my kids. My son's 14, my daughter's 16. She's starting to drive my truck and loving it. And I drive her to school every morning, to high school. And so, you know, we are always talking about stuff. And so I got the kids both excited about getting into the stock market. My daughter's more excited because she loves Starbucks. And I'm like, well, you know what? Since it's that expensive, you should probably own a sliver of it, right? And so I said, so my wife and I talked about giving the kids a bit of money. Then they can also put in, and we can start investing and buying, and they'll become business owners. The mm-hmm. Berkshire Hathaway model is great. They kind of are in a category of their own, which is become a business owner, own the best businesses with the best management, and just companies that are set to be with you for a long time, right? And so that's what I'm trying to get my kids, who can do the buy and hold, no problem. They have small amounts of money and they can own these companies and be like, wow, I own a piece of Starbucks. When they go there, they'll be like, they are an actual owner. And they get really excited thinking that my son can own, you know, part of a company that he likes. It could be a gaming station, could be a motorbike company like Honda or something, all of that stuff. So you just need to buy assets and, you know, let them accumulate and rotate as they expand out to different assets. Mm-hmm. And when you get a bunch of growth, don't spend it. Just, you know, whatever goes into assets, you leave it there, more mm-hmm. or less.
Excellent, Chris. Well, is there anything that you're keeping an eye on at this time to, you know, mark a shift in sentiment, anything like that, or anything you want our listeners to think about before we wrap up here?
I think the only thing is, I think we've had a really nice run. Easy money's been made to the upside. I think people should be cautious of the stock market here. I mean, the trend is up. I think people need to be long equities, but I wouldn't be adding and getting overly excited at this point. I'm expecting the market to start to pull back, this uptrend to come to an end for a while. I think people just need to realize, you know, you got to know which assets are moving up, which ones to own. And I think equities have just had a good run. They may start to weaken, and we actually might see that money flowing into precious metals. We might see gold, silver, and miners come to life, generate a new trigger. So that's the next thing that I'm looking at, is if the equities market stalls out here, where does that money go? And I got a feeling it might go into precious metals, and that could become a very good opportunity.
Excellent, Chris. Well, for those that want to see more of your material, you put a lot of free stuff, excellent stuff available on your X account at The Tech Traders, and of course, thetechnicaltraders.com. Chris, thanks so much for your time. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Tom. Take care.